Couple of definitions as we begin this part of our time together today on community. First one is by a guy named Webster. Everybody's heard of him. Community is a group of people living in the same area and under the same government. Now, yeah, okay. I guess technically speaking, that is a adequate definition of community, but it seems a little shallow to me, seems a little narrow. I like the second one quite a bit better. Community is a group of people committed to each other, working together for a common cause, accomplishing tangible results for their common cause, results which they couldn't have achieved in isolation of each other. I find that quite a bit more robust as far as a definition of community goes. I think that's much, much better and is striking at a point that I'm going to try to be making this morning and again in a couple of weeks. Along this second definition is a statement by Margaret Wheatley, who says, "There is no power for change greater than a community discovering what it cares about." In other words, when a community knows why it exists, it has a power inherent in it that is amazing and incredible. Some other quotes about the power of a community. Helen Keller, "Alone, we can do so little, but together we can do so much." One of my favorite has been used here before by different ones, might be on the next slide, is an African proverb: "If you want to go quickly, go alone. But if you want to go far, go together." It's great wisdom in that little proverbial statement. If you want to go quickly, go by yourself. Anybody who's ever traveled any length of time knows you can make a lot better time when it's just you than when it's you and your wife and two or three kids who have to stop every hour or so, you know, to use the bathroom. So if you want to go quickly, right, go alone. But if you want to go far, go together. And I like this quote from a woman named Jen, I'm not sure how she pronounces her last name, Wayack, maybe? That sounds better than whack, so we'll go with Wayack. But I like her quote: "In community, we become better than we ever believed possible." In community, we become better than we ever believed possible. Jen had a unique experience which really brought that statement home to her a couple of years ago. She is a health and wellness coach who lives out in Seattle, Washington, and her motto is she helps busy people get the bodies they want without having to give up their lives. Sounds like a good plan. She's also an author. She blogs a lot on several places. And about 2 years ago, she became one of the relatively few to summit Mount Kilimanjaro. And she blogged about that experience after she had summited Kilimanjaro. And I want to share a little bit about a little bit that she wrote from that experience. "I took my final steps toward the summit with tears in my eyes because I never believed that I, someone who grew up this sick little kid who held a deep-seated belief that she'd never be an athlete, would do something that thousands of people each year, including world-class athletes, fail to do. Yet there I was. But I didn't get there alone. I had lots and lots of help. While training, I called on my friends who were athletes and coaches to ask their training and recovery advice. For example, when I got ambitious on a hike and was so sore the next day I had to crawl up and down the stairs on my hands and knees, I called my Ironman triathlete friend, Shannon, to ask him how to avoid having that happen again. His answer was twofold. First, he told me not to ever do that again. And then second, he patiently walked me through the world of sport recovery drinks. As I continued preparations, I continued to turn to my friends, the climbing company, and seasoned climbing veterans for advice on buying and renting gear, figuring out the best snacks for the trip, understanding the challenges of altitude sickness, and everything else that went into making summiting Mount Kilimanjaro a reality. The phrase, "it takes a village," certainly applied to me and this trip. Then when I finally got there, it was my turn to pay it back. I was climbing with older gentlemen who were having difficulty navigating the rocks and tree roots. So I would reach down and offer a hand whenever needed. After all, we were in this thing together. I wanted to both pay it forward and see them succeed. At altitudes above 10,000 feet, you feel the effects of altitude sickness. And on our summit day, we were traveling between 15,000 feet and 19,340 feet. Meaning at the summit, I had half of the oxygen I would at sea level. Hiking up a 45-degree scree-covered slope with half the air I normally had was making the final ascent a challenge. But I had a wonderfully patient guide who would listen to my breathing as I puffed along behind him. And he and the summit team would stop for me, let me catch my breath, and then patiently move forward only once I was ready. Then all of a sudden, there it was. The summit, both literally and metaphorically. I had put in months of physical training and a year of research and planning to make it happen, and finally it was a reality, but I never could have done it alone. In the days and weeks after my summit, I cried a lot. Accomplishing something that seemed so out of reach forced me to fundamentally change my beliefs about who I am. And to me, that is a huge part of the power of not going it alone. In community, we become better than we ever believed possible. She is testifying to a reality that rings true. Not only for those who wish to summit a 19,000-foot mountain, but also for all of those of us who wish to walk faithfully with Jesus every day, through the peaks and valleys of this life, into the life that is to come in the renewed and restored heavens of earth. And that reality is this: together is better. Would you say that with me? Together is better. Solomon, Scripture says, was the wisest man to have ever lived. Sometimes, wisdom that comes from the past, those of us living in the present don't think as much about it, right? But I want you to listen to something Solomon wrote, the wisest man to have ever lived, once wrote. Two are better than one, because they have a good return for their labor. If either of them falls down, one can help the other up. But pity anyone who falls and has no one to help them up. I was thinking about that just this last day or two, as I've seen on several news sources the story of this man whose wife was one of the 22 victims shot in the El Paso shooting recently, who had no one to come to his wife's funeral. No kids, no family. He had no one. And so he put out a plea to the community of El Paso, please come to my wife's funeral. And maybe you've seen some of the social media news clips. Maybe you've seen other evidences of this. Thousands of people showed up to go to this man's wife's funeral. Now, don't get me wrong. That's great. And it shows a wonderful spirit for the people who went. But they went because of the circumstances of her death. Had she fallen down the steps and broken her neck and died as a result of that fall, would thousands of people likely have showed up at her funeral? If she died of a heart attack or of a long battle with cancer, had the circumstances been different, this man would likely have buried his wife alone. Solomon says, pity anyone who falls and has no one to help them up. If two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? Though one may be overpowered, two can better defend themselves. A cord of three strands is not quickly broken. There is just something about the power of community. Now, growing up, I never heard this, what we often refer to as church. I never heard this referred to as a community. But that's what we are. We are a community of baptized believers who have pledged our allegiance to King Jesus and to each other, and we are devoted to helping each other follow Jesus through the ups and downs of this life into the life to come in the restored and renewed heavens and earth. We're not just a group of individuals that happened to show up here this morning at 10 o'clock. Now, maybe that's true for a couple of you. You're not part of this community. You're here in town. Maybe you're passing through. Maybe you're new. I think I will go to church at university today at 10 o'clock. And we're so glad you're here. But there's more here than just people who decided to show up at 10 o'clock. At least there should be. This is not just a one-time deal where we happen to come together at 10 o'clock on Sunday. We are a community. We are a family. We are a community, a faith community of people who are baptized followers of Christ who are following Jesus together through this life into the life to come. This morning, I want us to think just a little bit about the power of community and how together truly is better. I want to share a couple of reasons with you this morning. We'll look at them here in just a moment. In a couple of weeks, I want to come back to this and dive into a little deeper about what we can do to build a stronger faith community here at University Church. So this is kind of a two-part. That's why you see part one. Part two is to come a couple of weeks. So why is together better? Two things I want to talk about briefly this morning. A lot of reasons I could give you, but we're going to focus on two. And each one has two parts, as you can see. So you're really getting four, but I'm only calling it two, okay? Kind of sneaky that way. Why together truly is better? Number one, because of the shared support and wisdom that is available to us as a community. Now, there was a time not too long ago, and a lot of us experienced, those of us who are older, I'm older, experienced that. We grew up in a community that included siblings, parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, cousins, and in many cases, a neighborhood of surrogate parents and family members and brothers and sisters who knew us, knew our families, and were part of our community. I grew up in a little neighborhood on Kirksey Highway that had a half a dozen to a dozen kids, all kind of about the same age, and we played together. We were in each other's homes. We knew each other. Our parents knew each other. We were connected. And beyond that, while some of my family lived in Michigan, went up there for a job, most of my family was here, right? Aunts and uncles and sisters and siblings and cousins were mainly here. So there was this community, and there was wisdom, there was support. It was all built in. It was all there for the taking, for anybody who wanted it. And while that may still exist for some people, though, it's becoming less and less common. We are much more urban now. Even in smaller areas like this, it's much more urban than it was when I was growing up. We're much more mobile. I'm told the average family now moves 6 times over the course of a lifetime. It's hard to imagine, but some of you, I think, have experienced that. This is not where you grew up. This is where you've landed, and you may yet move again, should something happen. We are much more disconnected from others as a society now than a generation or two ago. Would you agree with that? Is that a common experience? I mean, I'm not just plucking this out of the air. This is true, right? Neighborhoods where people actually know each other are somewhat few and far between, right? Even in a small town like Murray, I suspect some of you live in on a block, maybe in a neighborhood, where you may not know the people across the street from you very well, if at all. How many of you are still in a neighborhood where if somebody in that neighborhood dies, all of you as neighbors will come together and buy flower arrangements for that funeral? There's a few. But the vast majority of you don't. And some of you, that may be the first time you've ever even heard of such a thing as that. What? That's weird. No, I grew up in that kind of neighborhood where if somebody's relative of somebody in that neighborhood died, the whole neighborhood would buy a funeral arrangement for that family. That's not the norm anymore. That's the exception. That's rare. Because we are a much more, I think here's the right word, we are a much more fractured society. Families are more isolated than they ever have been before, and more likely to live miles away from each other. Some of you, as evidence of this, don't see your children but a few times out of the year, right? Or maybe you don't see your mom and dad or your grandparents more than once or twice a year because they live hours away. That used to be rare, but that's common now for most families. So we live in a much more fractured culture than we used to, than a lot of us did growing up. And so here's what happens in this fractured culture. We all look for support and ways to make connections with each other. And so we do that maybe through sports teams like the Titans or whatever. We look to make connections with people that we have something in common with. So maybe it's a sport, or maybe it's at work, or maybe it's at school. But it's hard, right? Because life is fast and we're busy and we're rushed and we're pulled to and fro, and relationships that are genuine and real and deep and supportive and helpful are hard to find. And so in that kind of fractured culture, where does a young couple who are far from home with maybe a young child or two, where do they go for the support they need when life gets hard? Who do they call when a child is sick and the other has an activity at school and one or both parents are at work and can't leave? Who's going to help them? Who does the man in that home look up to and learn from about how to be a godly father, or how to be a loving husband, or how to be just a spiritual man? Who does the woman in that family look to for spiritual advice when she doesn't know what to do about a situation in her marriage or in her family or just in her life in general? When the greater nuclear family and the community's not there, where do they go? What do they do? Who do they turn to? When people who come to school here, 18 to 24 years old, come to school here, they leave their community, whatever it looks like back home, and now they've come into an environment where maybe they know no one, or maybe a few people, but they don't see them very often. Who's going to speak encouragement and wisdom and support into your life? Who's your community going to be? You're going to get one of some sort. What will it be? What will it look like? What will it consist of? You'll need one, because we all need one, right? Where does an older couple, I was speaking to someone just this past week about this. Where does a widow or a widower getting on in years, far removed from their children, get the support and help they need in their so-called golden years? Who do they call when they need a little help around the house, but there's no one there to do that, and they can't really afford to pay someone to come do what they need done? Who supports and helps an older couple when one has to go to the hospital for an extended stay, leaving the other alone? All right, you get the point. But here's the thing. What if that young couple had a community of brothers and sisters, a community of spiritual moms and dads, granddads and grandmothers to lean on and call on for support and wisdom? Could that make a difference in the quality of their life and in how they experience their life? Sure it could. What if that older couple or aging widow or widower has a whole family of spiritual children and grandchildren they can call on for help and support when needed? What if they had godly friends to consult for wisdom and guidance in difficult times, and younger hands to help with a chore around the house? Might that make a difference in their life? Sure. Well, guess what? That's what this is supposed to be. And that's why we need this. Because no matter what stage of life we're in, if we're isolated and alone and don't have a community, we're going to struggle. And so I think God, in his infinite wisdom, knows that. And so he creates community for us. He invites us into community with himself, with the Son, the Holy Spirit. There's this community that we become part of, and everybody else who joins that community as well. We're a family, both universally, with every person who has ever confessed the name of Jesus, but also locally, such as we have right here. We are the family of God. Paul says as much in his letter to the church at Ephesus. Consequently, he says, you are no longer foreigners and strangers. It is possible to go through life as a foreigner, a stranger, someone who doesn't belong. But we don't have to, because now there is a family, there is a community we can belong to that removes that label of foreigner and stranger and replaces it with brother and sister. You are no longer foreigners and strangers, but now fellow citizens with God's people and members of his household. In him, the whole building is joined together and rises to become a holy temple in the Lord. And in him, you too are being built together to become a dwelling in which God lives by his Spirit. Such a rich, rich passage. We don't have to go through life alone. Now, we can choose to do that, but we don't have to. In the family of God, there's community. And there's wisdom and there's support available for those who need it and can be blessed by it. So why together truly is better? Because of all the support and wisdom that exists within a family and community such as this. And number two, reassurance and encouragement. At various points on her journey to summit Mount Kilimanjaro, Jean needed encouragement. When she got tired and doubted herself, she needed someone to step up and reassure her that she had what it took to climb that mountain. From time to time, even the strongest disciple of Jesus needs to be reassured and encouraged to keep the faith. Charles Spurgeon once wrote, "Friendship is one of the sweetest joys of life. Many might have failed beneath the bitterness of their trial had they not found a friend." Dr. Paul Faulkner, a former professor at Abilene Christian, author, lecturer, well-known marriage therapist, spoken here at this church, by the way, years ago, was fond of saying, "People are good medicine." People need people. You see, here's the thing. You truly can worship God anywhere. You don't have to come here to worship God. God is available anywhere you happen to be. You can call upon God in this building. You can call upon God in your car. You can call upon God in your backyard. You can call upon God in the boat, on the golf course, in the deer stand. Wherever you happen to be, you can call on God. No question about that. God's available everywhere, 24/7. His presence is all over this world. But here's what you can't get when you're not in a gathering like this or other gatherings with other Christians. You can't get the encouragement you need. You can't get the elbow to elbow, the shoulder to shoulder, the arm to arm encouragement and reassurance that we all need from time to time to keep on following Jesus. Sometimes we need someone in our corner. The movie Cinderella Man, great movie. It's a little dated. Some of you might not have seen it. But it tells the true story of boxing legend James J. Braddock. Braddock made an incredible comeback In the years of the Great Depression. He was a boxer earlier in his life, but he got injured. His had arthritis in his hands, and he had to give up fighting for a while. But after a few years had passed during the Great Depression, had no money, he was given a chance to get back in the ring and make a few dollars, and he took it. Long story short, he started winning. He started defeating his opponents, and he slowly began to climb the hierarchy of the boxing world at that time. And finally, he fought his way into a showdown with the reigning heavyweight champion of that time, a German by the name of Max Baer. Baer was a brute of a man. In fact, he had killed two men in two prior boxing matches. People were worried about Braddock. His wife was worried about him. She was afraid he was going to be a third victim who was killed in the ring with Baer. When the day of the fight finally arrived, though, his wife walked into the locker room where Braddock was getting ready for the fight, sent everybody else out of the room, marched up to her husband with fierceness in her eyes and steel in her voice, spoke these words to her husband. She said, "You just remember who you are. You're the bulldog of Bergen. You're the pride of New Jersey. You're the champion of an entire nation. You're everybody's hope. You're the hero of our kids. And you are the champion of my heart, James J. Braddock." And with that, Braddock went out, stepped into the ring where he defeated Max Baer and became the heavyweight champion of the world. From time to time, we all need someone like that in our corner. We need someone to remind us of who we are. We are the apple of God's eye. We are His beloved. Sometimes we need to be reminded that there is nothing more I can do to make God love me any more than He already does. And sometimes we need to be reminded there's nothing that I've done that would make Him love me any less. His love for me is complete. When you're not part of a community, who's going to tell you that? When you're not part of God's family, who's going to remind you that you are the apple of God's eye? When you're not part of the family of God, who's going to remind you that God loves you more than He loved Himself, because He gave Himself. He made Himself poor so that we might become rich. See, we need to be together, because when we're together, we can remind each other of that. We can help each other. And there are times that we all need someone to say, "Keep going. Finish your race. Finish the fight. Keep the faith. Don't quit." See, that's why the Hebrew writer said what he said, why he wrote what he wrote. He said, "Don't quit being together with other Christians. Don't get in the habit," he said, of not gathering with other Christians. Because here's what happens. When we don't get with other Christians, we drift. We drift. And we drift. And before we know it, we've gotten so far off course that it's so hard to get back. And so when we gather, when we're part of a Christian community, we help each other stay focused. We help each other stay in the game. We help each other stay the course, so that none of us will miss out on what God has to offer us in this life, and in the life to come. And so that's why the Hebrew writer also says, encourage each other every once in a while. No. Hebrews 3:13, encourage each other daily. As long as it is called today, so that no one, he says, will miss out on the rest that is ours in a relationship with God through Jesus Christ. And that rest begins now and extends all the way into eternity. So encourage each other daily, he says, so that nobody misses out on that beautiful relationship that God has prepared for us. So why is together better? Because shared support and wisdom is available, because reassurance and encouragement is so needed for all of us. Now, in a couple of weeks, we're going to talk about what can we do to help build a family that practices that kind of relationship. How can we help the church here be a better community? We're going to talk about that. All right. God bless you. Thank you for being here today. If we can help you this morning, if we can help your walk, if we can pray with you, put an arm around you, encourage you, we want to do that. That's why we're here. We're God's family. May the Lord bless you and keep you. Bless somebody sitting next to you. May the Lord make his face to shine upon you and give you peace.